Turn page 20. And page 20 is an even further look at what we discussed on page 19. These are how people feel in the period after retirement. So this is taking just a section of page 19, and they did some research and realised that there are groups of people that feel quite differently in the 5 years after retirement, maybe the 5 to 10 years after retirement. They just fall into different camps, and they're so easily identified by the way they talk and behave. I want you to take a minute each for each of those squares, and it doesn't matter that we're not accurate, but what do you think those words mean? These are just labels the researchers gave to the way people talk to them about retirement, how they felt. What do you think the words mean? We can make it up. A minute each max. So, if we can crack this in 3 minutes. There's no right and wrong answer here. The fact is they're different. So 5 to 10 years after retirement, people fall into different emotional camps about the way they feel about life. And these seem to be the six camps they fall into again and again and again. What do you think they mean? Okay, and stop, and stop. Let's start with this table, Paul. Just give me the first two. What do you think they mean? Listen up to Paul. What do you think the first two?
Sort of muddling on life, not changing too much.
Not changing too much for the way they were before.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perhaps still involved in some sort of business or work.
Yeah.
To get pleasure from that.
Yeah, which could mean that I have a business. I don't want to give it up yet, so I might wind down a little bit, but not a lot. I'll continue as I was before. And there are plenty of IFAs do that. Adventurers, what do you think, Paul? Paul's table.
Ideas, family, excitement.
Yeah.
Jumping off to waterfalls in Peru.
Now, can you see that the language you use to talk to... Give me that last bit again.
A large waterfall in
Peru. Yes. Jumping off a large waterfall in Peru. 62 years old, yeah, I could do that.
It's the Gordon's bit that made me laugh, because he shouted naked at the end.
Yes, Gordon would say.
Yeah.
It worked out already when you've got to be wearing these stones. Yeah. And of course, in your marketing material, you'd say something quite different to the naked man than you would. Yeah.
Why?
Well, yeah, ask Gordon. Hey. It's his remit. Okay, adventurers. Okay.
He's done it.
Graham, your table. What did you have for searchers?
Searchers. The category of people looking for something. They don't know quite what they're looking for. Perhaps need guidance and advice.
Yeah. And going deeper than that, actually, Graham, picking up on what Paul and Gordon, the naked man, talked about. You're stamped now, Gordon. That's it, mate. For the rest of the day, you've had it. Whereas these adventurers really do have some strong emotions about what they do want to do, the searchers are just not sure quite what to do from here. They're really undecided. Okay, take me on from there. Easy gliders, Howard. What's all that about? What do you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, maybe they're not that happy. Maybe they haven't got enough money, but you know what? It's just, I get up in the morning and whatever happens kind of happens, And many retirees do that. They actually don't know what to do from 1 week to the next. Haven't a clue. And they're not that bothered.
I thought an easy glider was someone, you get the odd client that comes along with their pension fund and say, well, I'm retiring at 60. What income can you get for me? Just
right.
Do it, and they just do it. They've got no interest. They just get the best you can for me, and just glide through, just not caring.
Yeah,
I don't think that's that.
Well, that's right. And here's a point I think we need to drive home here, John. It may have something to do with money. It may have nothing to do with money at all. It may just be my attitude and my state of mind when I'm in retirement and when I wake up in the morning, I just go with it, you know. I don't have any adventurous feelings. I won't continue what I did before. I just get up and roll with it. Now, you can't talk in retirement to an adventurer the way you talk to an easy client. If you try it, guess what? They won't come anywhere near you. You can't communicate in that fashion on your business card, your website, in the first meeting. You just won't gel. Does that make sense? Okay, a couple more. Involve spectators and retreaters. Stephen, what do you reckon?
I think we thought involved spectators were people who wanted to be involved in some sporting activity, for example, perhaps, you know, doing coaching, but not be on the committee member of the local tennis club. Some involved, but no big commitment.
Okay. That could be it. Yeah, that could be both in specific things, Stephen, and in life in general. You know, I'm not disinterested, but I don't want to be too deeply involved in the community, or, you know, I don't want to get sucked into all that stuff. Retreaters is a different category of human being altogether.
People backing off don't want to accept the fact that they have reached retirement age. They might be forced to retirement and don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
They're just... You've got to
tread
carefully there, I think.
Yeah, here's a personal view. If I were currently full-time financial planning, I'd leave retreaters alone. Because they don't have any future. They're actually retreating from life, and they're just... The question might be, so what are your plans for the next 5-10 years? Don't really have any. Don't know, not really that. They're non-future based. And you can't plan for a non-future-based human being. And you know what? If you're future-based in terms of you want to plan, you want to work with them, or you want to have a great, fulfilling relationship, the retreater you back off from is my view, just the way I would behave. I want them out of my life. Not because I don't love them, not because I can't help them, but I can't help them do anything specific. So it's like dealing with a piece of jelly. They're actually retreating emotionally because they find retirement deeply dissatisfying and often quite worrying and scary part of life. They don't like it. They thought they would when they were in anticipation, and they get there and they don't like it. And I meet a lot of people like that. In my ministry, a lot. We're just very unhappy. Retreaters. Okay. I want you to take a pen on page 21 and tick on page 21. So this is research done amongst what we call asset-rich elders. What do you think I mean by that, asset-rich elders? This isn't some religious group, okay? What do you think I mean by asset-rich elders?
Lots of property, capital, but no income.
Okay, why elders?
Older people.
Yeah, we're talking, you know, typically 55 plus, different mentality to the 35-year-old, just made loads of money. Quite different mentality altogether. So research done on asset-rich elders, 500k plus, shows that this is the way they think about financial planning and financial advice. Tick those boxes where you think you've got it right and leave alone those ones where you think, actually, I've not quite got that. So Nigel, where I was, you know, your comments on thresholds, they don't like to be categorised simply by assets alone. I'm not saying it doesn't come into it, but they actually find that quite offensive in the research done. Tick those boxes where you think you've got it right. Very much a private thing. Does your technology allow me to online access my portfolio without you getting involved? Yes or no? If it doesn't, asset-rich elders won't comfortably find you a fit. And maybe you don't want to deal with asset-rich elders. What the heck, you know? Clarity, transparency and simplicity in communication. IFAs do struggle with this. We're in love with our business. We're in love with our service. We're in love with our skill. We're just in love with it. We just ooze it out of our pores. We come up with language that just think, what on earth is going on about? I saw one very, very well-known financial planner who's a very intelligent chap and has constantly won awards in the last 5 years. I looked at the website and I did not understand what he was saying. Well, I've been in financial planning for 20 years. I just did not understand what this chap was saying. The language was just frightening. And he's successful. And I went up to him, I said, look, if you just change that, you'd be even more successful. You'd work less and have more fulfilling client relationships, because they don't get it. You have to explain it to them. If you have to explain anything in your marketing material, you know, you've blown it. You're not there to explain it. So, Claire, who does at least quarterly communication to their existing client base? At least quarterly communication on a regular basis, okay? And you might have seen me banging on about this in a video that I did last week. Rant, rant, rave, rave. I've started to rave a lot on these videos. I'm getting a bit worried, actually. I'm looking at them 3 months after doing it, thinking, blimey, that's a bit ranty. Scares even me. And I did say, if you get a quarterly newsletter, it doesn't work. Quarterly newsletters have almost zero impact in whatever it is you're trying to do. Quarterly just doesn't hack it. Just doesn't. It's supremely ineffective. I know there's some really brilliant newsletters on the market. I'm not saying the content is not brilliant. I'm saying the frequency just doesn't hack it in influencing what you want to influence. It doesn't work. Sorry. Okay, page 22. Single summary. What's page 22 saying? What have we learned? What's page 22 summarising? Now, what's that saying to us? One message. There's a single theme on that page.
You should have your marketing rate for each. You need to have your marketing rate for each level of people to deal with.
Yeah. What does it say needs to match? What does it say needs to match to attract them to you? Ian?
Language you use.
Okay, language needs to match. Something else needs to match on the right-hand box.
Positioning?
Yeah. Something else.
Surely you're back to your articulation again.
Sorry?
Surely you're back to the articulation.
Yeah.
The client's problems.
But something else... Before you even articulate, what needs to match...
What you can do.
Remember we spent 3 hours on strengths and geniuses last workshop? Our genius. What's your genius? You can't be genius at everything. Something that you're genius at, something that you're really strong at in your business needs to match what's going on in their emotional lives. If your strength doesn't match what they yearn for, you're lost. Not saying you'll never get together. I'm just saying somebody's strengths that does match what they yearn for will get them more easily than you. Does that make sense? Do my strengths, what I'm genius at inside my business, and the way I articulate those strengths, match what they yearn for in their life? Is there a match? If there isn't, you're just really struggling. It's got to line up. And who's played snooker? It's got to line up. You want to pot it? You've got to line them up. Okay, page 23. All of you should know how to summarise this page because you've read about it in the... So I want to stare at it for a minute, 60 seconds, and then somebody summarise. Who's got a green box here which says there's supposed to be a quote here? All of you, yeah. Second typo, you missed the first one. So I've got the quote here. Apologies. I will read it out to you in just a second. Somebody summarise this page for me. 30 seconds more to stare at it. You be the teacher and I'm the student. We're now moving into... We've done segmentation. That's your existing clients. We're now taking what we've done and moving out there into the market to target new clients. Yep. So you've learned how to segment and describe your strengths, their yearnings. Now you're going out there to target new clients. And the marketing manifesto talked about that in detail. So teach me. What's the key word on this page?
Niche.
What does niche mean?
Specific.
Very specific. Want to add to that? Give me an example of niche.
What is in the client bank?
Yeah. Niche. Give me an example of a niche market.
Business owners in a age between 45 and 55, in a 15-mile radius of Manchester, who play in the golf in the local golf club.
Brilliant. Eric, do you have a niche?
You could pick a profession, like dentists or doctors.
Okay. Do you have one for yourself? Not yet. Okay. Anybody else have a niche?
Not yet.
Pulse anybody? The checkbook.
Sorry?
The pulse and the checkbook.
Yeah. The classic IFA niche. Pulse and the checkbook. Okay. Anybody else developed a niche so far? Okay. Stuart.
Trustees. Trusts with assets in excess of
50. So let's just list that. Trustees.
Trustees who are working in working within a 50-mile radius. That's actually within the Bay area, which is Kendal and Windermere, for those who don't know.
Okay, trustees in the Cumbria area.
In a specific area, managing trust funds with realisable assets of £50,000.
Okay, minimum realisable of £50,000. Got to be trustees, got to be within X mile radius of Kendal, and got to have at least £50,000 within the trust that they're managing. Okay, anybody else got a niche market? Gordon?
Hospital consultants over the age of 45 in Edinburgh.
Hospital consultants over the age of 45 in Edinburgh. Small business owners, 45 plus. What was the reason?
Working in a 50-mile radius of Manchester, but play at a local golf club.
Okay. Golf club. Define for me small business owner.
Yeah.
Define small business.
Who have... assets or...
Lots of ways of defining it, so when I chose it I thought that was a bit stupid one because I knew you were going to do that. So small business owners, so with employees of less than 20 employees. Okay, anything else? Let's push this right down. Let's be really hard on this small business owner. Give me some more definition, Stephen. I want more definition of small business owner. I want it more niche than that.
Which sector are they in? Profitability of the business? How fast are they growing? It's a shareholding position. When is their exit planning going to be? All
okay, here's where you're struggling with this, because this is actually quite hard. This is why most... And this is the beauty of today. If you can crack this, then you know... that 95% of any room you walk into in any meeting in this industry won't get this, which will mean you're in the 5% that does, which is a very powerful place to be. Look, here are the two questions. Can I hear you talking to me and only me, and can you get to me very, very efficiently? Can I hear you talking to me and only me? So, how many small business owners in the UK?
About 4.7 million businesses.
Yeah. 4 million plus. How many clients can you handle and give a quality service to? Seriously.
3.5 million.
Okay. Paul. How many individually can the three of you handle and give a brilliant service to?
200.
Each?
Between us.
Between you?
The right level.
Okay. That's three people, 200 people. There are 4+ million small business owners out there, and I know we're talking about a geographical region, but you know, you don't need... You can be much tougher than this. You can be much tighter. So I want you to niche down, niche within a niche. Look at the categories here and start... Go on, explain this page to me. Explain the words.
So they could be working in the motor industry or in a certain...
It could be industrially based, yeah, or professionally based. Okay, explain the words to me first. Andy, I want you to explain two of those words.
On the page,
yep,
here,
in the boxes.
I was asking Howard what psychography meant again, because
okay, so
go for demography, which is
demography, which is
a white male between 30 and 40.
Okay, so what does the word demography mean? What categories does it cover? Let's be really specific here.
Well, demographic, so
age.
Yeah.
Age,
sex, sexual orientation. What else?
Location.
Creed.
Where they live.
Creed.
Belief.
Nationality.
Ethnic background. Religion. And there's a lot of stuff here you could use. For example, I will only deal with, let's say, Asian businessmen who have Muslim origin within a particular tribe of the Muslim, you know, Shia, whatever, who live within 3 miles of Bethnal Green. And own their own small business. Yeah, it's niche, 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 niche. Niche tighter and tighter and tighter. You know, and I couldn't work with that group because I don't understand them. And when I met them as a financial planner, I just didn't get them. I just don't get this guy. We're talking different planets, so I couldn't work with them. So niche with it, and look at the four words there. Demography we've got, industry, what does that mean? A profession or a vertical industrial market, for example. Give me some examples.
Doctors.
Dentists.
Architects.
The architects, yeah. So small business owners who are architects, and maybe architects is wrong in the recession, but who are architects within a 10-mile radius of, you know, who are over 45. And yeah, it, you know, I'm not saying you should use all four of these things, but the more you can use... The more I can hear you talking to me and only me, not some other small business owner, has nothing to do with me, and the easier you'll find it to get to me. Because if I'm an architect, I go to certain community meetings, I go to professional meetings that you can meet me at, I have my own magazines that you can read. Yeah, do you see? The channel to get to me becomes more clear when you start to niche me down. If you say small business owner, tell me about the magazines that a small business owner reads.
Federation of Small Businesses.
Yeah, but what would they rather read?
golf
magazines.
Golf Monthly.
Yeah, Golf Monthly. But in their industry, don't they rather read their own industrial magazines or their own professional? Okay, honestly, do you read Architecture Monthly? Just not of interest to you. What do you read? Yeah, anything to do with, anything but new model. Okay, new model of Eisen Financial.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what we have time for.
All we have time for is the stuff that Dave Scarlett says. So, Wendy, the less you niche, the harder you're going to make your job. The more you niche, the easier your job becomes. The green bit says, should say, one of the most underutilized marketing weapons for small businesses, that's you, is the power of niche marketing. The truth is, when you narrow the focus of your marketing, you expand your profitable client base. I will email that to you. When you narrow the focus of your marketing, don't please...
I'm estimated still.
Yes. When you narrow the focus of your marketing, you will expand your client base. He or she who is afraid to narrow will make life difficult for themselves. The problem is you. It's not the market. You're just scared of narrowing down. Why are you so scared? Why? Stephen? Why are you so scared?
It's only habit, because you're kind of hardwired to do all the stuff that you've always done, because that's how you got here, and you assume that if you break that habit, everything's just going to collapse around you.
So if you narrow down to a niche market and you're only going after that niche market, what do you stop doing?
Well,
Well, you stopped doing all the non-profitable stuff that's prevented you from doing the potentially profitable stuff down the road.
That's the upside. The scary part is what? What's scary about focusing on a niche market? What's really scary?
You're losing all that potential business that might otherwise have come through.
Absolutely. You're ignoring all of those human beings that might give you loads of money. That's the scary part. And that's why you don't do it. But all that business out there, I'm turning away. I can't do that. No, you can't afford not to.
It must be very difficult for a new business, though, to find its niche market straight away.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And so you've got to be established for a few years. If you're doing dentists, at least have 20 or 30 of them on your books before you go out to the market and tell them that you're specialising dentists in their area.
Absolutely.
Because every dentist in Edinburgh knows every other dentist in Edinburgh.
Yeah, which is why we started with STP. We did the 5 C's, then we went to STP. Segment first and ask yourself the question, do I deal with this stuff? Do I already deal with dentists? What are they telling me? Do I actually like dealing with them? Although my worst clients, don't want to deal with anymore. Segment first, then you target, and then you can get your language right to position yourself. See the order? Segment, target, position. Segment, target, position. What does my existing client base tell me about what I'm really good at? What could it signal to me that I could do more of and make more money? And what I find comfortable in working with? Then I target that market and I get the language right. So psychography, what does psychography mean before we move on? What's it mean?
Getting into their heads.
Getting into their heads, yeah. Yeah, talking language, what gets into their heads? Psychography. Psychography, if you just want to make a note, the way I think and feel when I buy.
So how's that different to behaviour?
Sorry?
How is that different to behaviour?
Okay, good question. Behaviour, that which I have already done, which signals something to you. So I have already done this and you can track it, I've done it. So if I have previously invested £250,000 somewhere, you know I'm the kind of client that is ready to invest £250,000 somewhere, if I've done that. So my past track record tells you things about me. Psychography might be, you need to understand where I am in my life and then work out how I think when I buy. Not an easy game. Well, we've just been through some pages, Andy, which says these are how these people think at certain times in their retirement and pre-retirement. Now you need to understand that your language needs to match their way of thinking and feeling. Psychography. Let's move on. Ha ha. Barrington Scarlet. I love this thing. Because this is me, so I'm going to have a big ego trip. This was designed originally in 1989, then redesigned in 1991. And this is what took me, this little thing here, this is the real size of the front of the brochure. And it's quite carefully designed. There were three brochures, three little pamphlets, about 10 pages each. One was green with a diamond. One was magenta with a club. And one was blue with a heart. Actually, the other way around. Blue with a club and magenta with a heart. And I thought that was brilliant. I was in love with my own stuff. And I didn't know anything about marketing. But each one was a different subject aimed at a different target market. Within a target market. So the target market was, ready, IT consultants. Who had never consulted before, come out of permanent employment, were about to start freelancing. So I caught them at that point, about to go freelancing. And within that, I recognised there were three different markets. I won't go into that. So I niched within a niche. And I had a little brochure prepared for each one, what I wrote. And I hadn't a clue what I was doing. But it worked. And this stupid little brochure took me from an attic room in King's Cross to take over the whole first floor of Western Australia House in 2 years flat. So I know this stuff works. Now, who am I talking to on the front page of that brochure?
New businesses. New businesses.
Yep, but what are they called?
First
changes.
The first-time contract. That's what we called them. That's what the market called them. Are you a first-time contractor? You've ever been contracting or freelancing before? Yeah, I'm a first-time. That's what they called themselves. So I had to use the language of them on the front of the brochure. Does that make sense? Not me. I'm not talking about me here. I'm talking about them. And it was getting started. You're about to get started freelancing. Guess what? Inside this brochure is stuff for you.